the way we were talking last week. Sitting in a comfortable upright position with your hands either in your fingers connected through some mudra, your palms facing upward. Keep your back as straight as you can without feeling too much tension at this point. We're going to add one more practice in here that we didn't do last week. I want everyone to inhale in a wave, if you can, from your feet to the top of your head. And as you do so, tense up your body as much as you can within reason. And then we're going to exhale with what's known as a double breath, which is a long and a short exhalation. Short and a long, I mean. Like that. And throw the breath out. And as we do that, relax the tension in the body. Often by exaggerating the tension and then exaggerating the relaxation, we can make ourselves a little more comfortable. So let's do that a few times, three times. Inhale. Tensing the body. Hold it a moment. Exhale with a double breath. One more time, inhale. Tensing the body. Exhale with a double breath. One more time. Exhale. Okay, let's just inhale and exhale very consciously without necessarily counting, but just being aware, if possible, pulling the breath from the diaphragm. And hold it for just a moment and then exhale completely. Just take a few long, comfortable breaths. And let's do a few more breaths, feeling now as if we're not just drawing in air, but we're drawing in expanded consciousness. Feel as you inhale that all the positive, loving force of the universe is coming into you. And as you exhale, as if you are relaxing deeply into that positive reality. Just bring the imagination, use your imagination. Feel with the inhaling breath, positive, loving force of the universe comes in. With the exhaling breath, you're relaxing deeply into that positive reality. And just to review, the way we do the Hong Saw meditation, we simply observe the breath, breathing through the nose, if possible, actually feeling it coming in through the nostrils. And as the breath flows in, mentally we follow it with the sound of Hong. And then as the breath flows out, mentally we follow it with the sound of Saw. The meaning of this is just what we were doing. I am one with the Infinite Spirit. I am, the positive force flows in, one with the Infinite Spirit. Hong, Saw. Just the Sanskrit syllables are better than the whole English word, but you can follow the Sanskrit syllables with the feeling of what those words mean. Meditation is very dull without the feeling of the heart. Our attention is at the point between the eyebrows. Remember how we raised our eyebrows and looked outward to our physical hand, sort of setting our eyes, just gazing into the distance, slightly raised above the horizon line toward superconsciousness. But just a relaxed outward looking, even though our eyes are closed. If you see any light, concentrate at the center of whatever you see. If it's unstable and moves around, just hold your consciousness as much as you can in the center. Now, meditation is not something we are making up. We are in relationship to the power and the presence of the divine, in the form of the masters, in the form of infinite light. So we always start our meditation with a prayer. So now please repeat after me. Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Friend, beloved God.
Friend, beloved God.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Babaji Krishna.
Babaji Krishna.
Lahiri Mahashaya.
Lahiri Mahashaya.
Swami Sri Yukteswar.
Swami Sri Yukteswar.
Paramhansa Yogananda.
Paramhansa Yogananda.
Saints of all religions.
Saints of all religions.
Humbly we bow to you all.
Humbly we bow to you all.
Help us to meditate deeply.
Help us to meditate deeply.
To experience your presence.
To experience your presence.
As a river of joy.
As a river of joy.
Flowing through the center of our being.
Flowing through the center of our being.
Help us to concentrate deeply.
Help us to concentrate deeply.
On the in and outflow of breath.
On the in and outflow of breath.
That we may feel.
That we may feel.
Your constant presence.
Your constant presence.
Within us.
Within us.
Om. Peace. Comfortably in and out, consciously, and when you're ready, exhale, and then on the next inward flowing breath, chant Hong, and then follow the breath with the Hong Sa after that. If you find that your mind has wandered, simply find the breath and begin again. Concentrate as deeply as you can mentally on the mantra to keep other thoughts at bay. If they chatter in the background, just pay no attention. Just keep the mantra in the foreground. Eyes uplifted, feeling the power and the presence of spirit affirmed. I am one with the infinite. Bringing the thought of your children. Visualize them at the point between the eyebrows or at the looking upward and outward. Visualize your children standing in the light of the divine at that point. Feel as if you are connecting with your child or your sons, not as you are accustomed to doing as father or mother to a child, but soul to soul. Realize that even though their bodies are small and their chronological age is short, the divine spirit which has entered into them, the individual soul on its journey, is equal to your own. Step back just a bit from the identification you have as children and parents, and feel instead that you are meeting a soul to soul. And as you hold them in this light, ask that God fill your children with His power, His understanding, His love and clarity. See your child being imbued with this divine power. Don't ask for anything in particular from that power, but only that the soul of your children be connected to that power, that they may use it according to their own divinely scripted destiny. Offer to your children your wholehearted, unconditional support. For the divine journey of this incarnation that you are sharing with them in these roles of parent and children. Feel the prayer coming from the center of your being, the place where you breathe. Inhalation and the exhalation, uniting you with the inhalation and the exhalation, the divine flow of energy in your children. Now repeat after me this prayer, this healing prayer that Yogananda has taught us. Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Thou art omnipresent.
Thou art omnipresent.
Thou art in these children.
Thou art in these children.
Manifest Thy healing presence.
Manifest Thy healing presence.
In their bodies, minds, and souls.
In their bodies, minds, and souls.
Rub your hands together and feel energy building up between your hands. Hold your hands in the air and feel the energy flowing, concentrating at the point and between the eyebrows, but also feel the energy flowing from your hands. Direct it toward the image you're holding of your children, and we'll chant Om together, imitating the sound of the universe and having that sound go out in healing energy to them. Om. brought upstairs from downstairs pillow and kneeling benches that we can try out afterwards if you like. Any questions or thoughts about anything that we've been doing so far? Did you try any of the meditation during the week? Did you?
I had an interesting insight. I think that is a byproduct of our talking and my own trying to meditate. I've been traveling to the East Coast.
Every week?
Mm-hmm, to D.C. or to New York. I never travel for my work, but it happened that in these last 3 weeks, it's all compressed.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a very terrible traveler. I get seasick, just everything is terrible. But I landed in, I think it was New York, at 1 in the morning, and went for your luggage. It's just very grim. But I realized at that moment that I was so used to just giving into the feeling of sort of misery and just sort of say, oh, I'm miserable. And no one could see me. I mean, I'm just quiet. I'm walking, but I'm miserable. And I'm so accustomed to it. And I thought, oh, yeah, I was reading here about, my body's not feeling good, but I'm not just my body. So I could sort of step out a little bit from that experience and say, oh, yeah, this is uncomfortable, but I'm looking at it from a different perspective instead of just saying, it is me. I am misery,
body.
My stomach is queasy, but mm-hmm. I was sort of changing my relationship to the physical experience of it. And instead of just succumbing to it like a leaf on a river, going with it, I felt I could just step out of the river for a little while and say, oh, okay, I feel more stronger in myself. It didn't change any of the physical experience, but it changed to me sort of kind of a different kind of reality.
Mm-hmm.
That was
very good.
You know,
the entire spiritual path can be summed up in the simple words, changing your perspective.
Mm.
Because reality, I mean, things are what they are, but it just depends on where we're looking at them from.
Mm-hmm.
Subconscious, conscious, superconscious. It's all still there, and it all still follows its own destined karma, but depending on where you're looking at it from, your experience of it is completely different.
I felt myself smiling as I waited for my luggage, the only person there at 1 in the morning at the terminal. I had this inward smile because I just realized that it's I'm not at the whim of everything that happens to in this on this level or this plane of existence. It's not the only thing that I am.
I'm sure you're smart enough to see the extraordinary implications of that.
Yes.
The implications of that are literally infinite. It leads you all the way to Jesus on the cross, not really suffering, even though everybody else thought he was.
Mm.
Because his perspective on what was happening to him was entirely different than everybody else's perspective. And the perspective of history has focused in on our little perspective. Oh, he must have been miserable. But he wasn't. Because just as you're conscious of realities other than your body, he perfected that to the infinite. Yes.
Uh-huh. I was just going to say, I used to travel a lot for my business. I always thought it was, towards the end of it, I loved it because it was the one time I could sit in an airplane and just practice Hong Sao with my eyes open.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, and you're stuck. You're stuck in this little, and you can't do anything else. And so it's actually, for me, I found it was actually easier to do it there than it was sitting in a chair in my house.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're stuck and there's nothing else to do, there's nothing else you can do, and so you just kind of accept it.
That's very interesting.
Rather than the thought I should get up and do the dishes, or I should fold the laundry, or something.
You can focus.
You can. Sometimes you can, and at airports, too. Just walk up and down the aisles, and just a good thing I found was just doing Hong Sao. But with the mind might be too restless to sit in a seat and do it. But if you do it while sitting with your eyes open, then all the visual stuff can kind of keep your mind busy while you're still doing Hong Sao.
Interesting. When I travel, I like to travel, too. I'm a good traveler, or relatively good. I'm a happy traveler. I don't exactly follow what Eric is saying, but I like the fact that I am nowhere and I am nobody. Mm. I mean, it's kind of like it's an opportunity to just disconnect from all the identities that I have, because nobody around me is affirming any identity for me. And I find in that lack of external affirmation, it's very easy to just become kind of a free-floating molecule just out in the universe without the tension of self-definition.
I've never been able to articulate that, but that's exactly what it
is. Yeah, it's great fun. I remember when I've traveled across the world a number of times by myself, because my appetite for going to India is greater than my husband's. So I remember I was in Seoul, South Korea. Yeah, it's a wonderful airport, exactly. Asiana Airlines. But anyway, I was all by myself, and I had a layover of a few hours there. And I played out this whole scenario. What if the world collapsed and I was stuck here for the rest of my life? You know, just it was just sort of fun, you know, like just recreating my whole universe, having to learn Korean, you know, just the whole thing. But just letting yourself just think of an alternate world and not being so gripped. What are you gonna
say? Have a wonderful, in Seoul, Korea, for a wonderful Christian
meditation.
Yeah, it's more benches, and they have a Muslim prayer mat too. Uh-huh. I just had a 4-hour there over there once and just had a great meditation.
If you do, you're finding you're just going to the East Coast. You don't have long layovers in international airports, but yeah, but still. But you can see it's all in your perspective. If your body has trouble, that's something you have to work with. Yeah. What are you going to say?
It's a good opportunity.
But very good. I mean, Jack, what I see happening from things that you've said is basically, you know, there's just there's a crack in the world view that. Where a whole alternate worlds are beginning to flood into you.
Yes.
And it never stops, and it's great fun. At least that's been my experience so far.
So even now, like we were meditating, it happened last week too, when you started the meditation, and I'm still, as I said, trying to figure out the instrumentation of this experience, but I find myself smiling, and I don't know why. You know, like I literally feel very
happy.
I almost see like, dancing, a quality of dancing, you know, a feeling of dancing. But I can't explain it, because it's not like I, you know, there's something that I know that I'm smiling about. It's just more, wow, it's a strange, very strange thing.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing.
It is.
No, it's very good, but very good. When I met Swami Kriyananda in 1969 when I was 22 years old. I moved to Ananda when I was a year and a half later, when I was 24 by then, or almost 24. And then 16 or 17 years later, by then married, Swamiji asked David and I, asked me to move here. And then we started over in a storefront church over on California Avenue. You know, this is all just... Somewhere in there, when we were still in the storefront church, which we were there for the first 7 years, I was counseling someone, and they were very new, and they were trying to sort things out, and God gave me a very interesting glimpse of what my own state of mind was in my 20s. And you know, you lose touch with it because you become someone else, and you might be able to even trace your own history, but you're not in it anymore. And a state of consciousness is very ephemeral. It's hard to grasp it. But I felt myself as I was in those first 3 or 4 years. I mean, I made very strong decision, followed through on it, never looked back. So on a certain level, there was this energy like this. And I felt that. I felt like there was a rope connected to my heart, and that from the moment I saw Swami Kriyananda, he was pulling on it, and God was pulling on it. The rest of me was such a mess. That's what I really perceived. It's like my brain was just roiling around, you know, just flipping this way and flipping that way and going, doing somersaults, and then I think of it like spaghetti. It was just all snarled. There wasn't a straight line anywhere in my thinking. But it didn't matter, because there was a part of me that was just absolutely knew exactly what it was doing, and it took control, and it just let my mind do whatever it wanted over here because it wasn't relevant.
Mm.
So my memory of it is being very directed, but the actual living of it, which I remember now when I think about how people treated me and responded to me and some of the really goofy things that I did during that period of time, it's obvious, you know, that I was not integrated. So when you talk about, you know, that, just like sort of clicking into something that you can't quite put any concepts on or intellectual structure around, that's good news, because you don't have any intellectual structure to put on this yet. We could give you intellectual ideas, but they won't mean anything to you for a long time. And yes, you entertain yourself. I mean, I did too. You read the books, you study, you get a thought here, you get a thought there. But that's really not where it's happening. They'll come together. They'll gradually come together more. And even from the start, as I say, it's intensely entertaining. I mean, I've always loved to study and talk about it. But you'll find that you are being guided by some other level in it. It's really just wonderful.
It's wonderful you're feeling some happiness so soon, bursting out. That's a real
I thought meditation from the outside, but I thought meditation was some profound, deep seriousness, you know. So that's why when I saw people meditate, I thought that's what they, what's what the experience was to be. I didn't realize this,
Well, this is also a characteristic of Yogananda's path, and especially the way Swami Kriyananda offers it to us. It is by nature a very lighthearted way. It's I mean, other ways, other groups have other styles.
Yes.
Yogananda's style is very much lighthearted. And it's just the way we work with it. We work a lot with the heart. We work with love and laughter, and but it's kind of technicolor. You know, it's not grim. And the emphasis is not on our inadequacies. One of the strongest principles of Ananda is to go with your strengths. You just take what's working and you go more with it, and that drags everything else along with it, which makes for a happier outlook too. This is what we were doing in our school. I mean, Helen and I were talking about this yesterday. She was talking about how if you say to the group of children, isn't it wonderful that we're just all here together? It's such, you know, it's such a treat to be here together. Everybody sits up straighter and is happier. When you say, sit up straight, you know, they're disinclined to sit up straight. But if you draw them into a positive flow of energy, that positive flow of energy lifts them. And you're not always, people are insecure that if you don't concentrate on what's failing, that it'll never get fixed. But the fact of the matter is, if you concentrate on what's working, that creates the magnetism to draw everything else in behind it. So the emphasis in meditation is always that. You know, life is hard enough, you don't have to go out and seek it. You know, you just, it'll find you. It'll chase you down. Any other questions or thoughts? Lana's a note taker, I see. That's good. Okay, so without your questions, what am I going to talk about now? What else should we talk about? Okay, I can talk a little bit more about just some of the fundamentals. We'll just stay with meditation, which is where we are now. I don't know if you all are comfortable meditating on chairs. People's bodies are different. I noticed, I mean, Lana and Joe both do yoga, so their bodies fold up nicely, but you don't ever have to be able to fold up your body to be able to meditate.
Fold up nicely, that's a, I like how you put that.
The one alternative to a chair, which is really, I always like to make sure people know about this. This is a kneeling bench. A kneeling bench is used like this. You sit as if you were a Catholic in church, then you set it underneath you, slanting towards your feet. And when you sit back on it, it's surprisingly, your body automatically sits straight and there's a surprising lack of strain all over your body. You can try it, Jack, if you want to. I don't know.
East-west is a nice one. It's rounded at the bottom, too.
That you
some
can,
people like, so you can adjust the tilt.
They come at different heights and different sizes. I brought one is slightly taller than the other. So just kneel down. and then lay it over your calves. Just, yeah, lay it over your calves. I think you can do it with your shoes on.
Yeah.
And then just sit back on it.
That's great.
It's a really comfortable. It's surprising.
Easier without your shoes on?
Yeah, probably without your shoes.
Yeah, but you know what it is too? I think they're. Uh-huh. You know when you point your foot out?
Mm-hmm. Uh huh.
I think I don't have enough flexibility
in your ankles to do it. Okay, it might not work for you. The chair is just fine. There's no,
you know. You might get more range of motion with the shoe off, though. Right. But just because
the
from
shoes,
what I'm seeing, yeah.
You don't necessarily need to be interested in it. I just always like to tell people about them. I've never used one. Right now I'm in a cushion. I did about 10 years on a kneeling bench, and then I went to a cushion. Don't ask me why. I just did.
My grandfather used to have one that also, it was a whole chair, and it rounded in part, so you could also put your elbows on it, just because of his, he needed that for his physical form. But that seemed to be really helpful for anyone who doesn't practice yoga or something.
Yeah, to be able to sit. This one, too, you can put an extra cushion on here. I used to have an exact position of, I raise this up with an extra cushion, and then I put a small cushion under my knees.
Hmm.
Now, I'm only saying all of that is, physical comfort, it becomes an issue if you try to meditate more than a few minutes. So don't feel like trapped by any particular situation. I don't have it with me right now, but if you even just take a blanket or even and give yourself a slanted seat like this one does, sometimes that just tips your hips sufficiently. That if you don't have the time or energy to build that kind of flexibility, you can create that kind of flexibility. And it all, so if you're finding yourself uncomfortable when you meditate, experiment. That's actually all I'm really trying to say. Experiment with this cushion and that cushion. And I mean, it gets to be comical because we have every year at Christmas time, and we spend a whole day meditating. It's a 10-6 meditation on the Saturday before Christmas. And on that day, everybody brings all of their gear in. It's sort of by agreement, we don't really look too closely at what everybody's bringing in, but people come in with a mountain of stuff, and one cushion here and one there and one here and one there, and then they can sit down and forget the body. So be creative about that, and don't just allow yourself to get stuck one way or another. I've certainly found, if I have the right situation, I can sit for, quite some time without needing to shift most of the time.
So maybe this is a related question. How is yoga related to meditation?
Yoga postures?
Yoga postures, yes.
Yeah. Yoga postures is part of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, and the second of it is asana, which means seat. The yoga postures were originally designed, Americans have created something else out of it, but yoga postures were originally designed to create sufficient harmony within the physical body that then it could sit comfortably and not be a distraction for meditation. And so that is the real purpose of yoga postures. As a side effect, and what yoga postures are is a series of positions. This is how Swami Kriyananda has developed the system. A series of positions that in and of themselves affirm certain mental attitudes. That's what I was talking about, the mudras. So when Swami Kriyananda created a yoga posture system, which they now call Ananda Yoga, he added to every yoga posture an affirmation. An affirmation of, my brain goes completely blank, but an affirmation where you hold the posture and then you'll say, my heart is filled with loving kindness. I give out to the world my spirit of joy. So that you're not only doing something physical, but you're also doing something to orient yourself in the right direction mentally. But the real purpose of them is just to get the body out of the way. Now, there's a side effect of them is that they make you healthy. They do very positive things for the flow of energy in your body. Americans, being extremely body-oriented, have now grabbed the system and use it. It's become intensely physical, even aerobic in its nature, the opposite of meditative, and becomes very much about beauty and sexuality and all sorts of really bizarre things. But people take things at their own level and then progress from it. If you have the time and inclination, yoga postures are extremely beneficial on every level of your life. if you don't have the time and energy, you can meditate without them, but you will sometimes have correspondingly physical problems. In the system that Yogananda brought to America, he created, he did teach yoga postures, but his emphasis was more on a system of 32 exercises that he calls the energization exercises. And they don't look anything like yoga postures, but they're not aerobic either. They are using the willpower, using the will to gain mastery over the flow of energy in your body. And they take about, once you learn them, they take about 12 minutes to do. And if you learn what we're doing here through the Ananda classes, the Hong Sa that we just learned is meditation one, the energization exercises is the second course. Because the energization exercises have this multiple benefit. One, they are extremely good for your health. And they people who do the energization exercises have notably, you know, more dynamic health than people who don't. It's a fact. It also, the entire problem in meditation, when you really get into it, is that we don't have control over our energy. We don't have control over our physical feelings. We don't have control over our emotional responses. We don't have control over our thoughts. And all of those things are just specific manifestations of the fact that we don't have control over our energy. It's very hard to gain mastery over your energy because it just goes away from you. You're walking in the airport, your energy begins to sink. And you begin to realize that, oh, by orienting myself differently, the energy doesn't have to sink. I can pull at least some of it up. The body still feels bad, but part of me is still okay. That was an experience of control in your energy. You phrased it exactly that way. I don't have to just sink into this. Whatever the I was that you were referring to with that pronoun. So the energization exercises are something that Master's original Yogananda's, which I call him Master's original contribution to the science of self-realization, was to, we use our bodies with double breathing and tensing and relaxing and a few other things. I could show you a few of them. But what you're really doing is you're training the willpower through that physical expression to be able to direct your energy at will however you choose, which translates directly into your ability to meditate. So one can do yoga postures, but if one is less inclined toward that, the energization don't require the same degree of flexibility and so on like that.
What the children do?
Gary's class does the energization.
You see them out there every morning. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it's great for teenagers because energy control is a really big deal for them. And they do pieces of them in other classes, but they do the full set. Gary teaches them the full set. So we can do a couple. Why don't we just stand up and do a couple of them, just while we're here. One of the basic energization exercises I mentioned when we were breathing in and out, I was talking about the double breath. The double breath is a part of this. The double breath, and let's just do it more carefully here, as you go, you inhale, you can actually inhale with the double breath. It's a short and a long. And then you exhale a short and a long.
Are you exhaling with your mouth?
And exhaling through the mouth. Inhale through the nose, exhale through the mouth. The short breath and then the longer breath, like the rest of it out. Now the double breath, double breath, arms extended. This is the first energization exercise. Arms are out, and you exhale going. Let me just say this correctly. You bend your knees, but keep your back straight, so it looks like this. You're not going like this, right? You're just going down on your knees, bringing your hands together, then pulling your arms out like this. Okay, so you inhale and then double breath out. Inhale. Now here's another couple of things we add to it. As you inhale, you tense your upper body and you tense your arms out like this. And then as you exhale, you relax it all inward again. You're sort of tensing a lot of your body, but not all of it systematically. Whenever you feel tired, go outside. and do a couple of these. Don't bend over it, Lana. Keep your head up. Just sink on your knees. Okay. Let's see. What comes after when you do the short series? I can't remember either.
The short series.
There's a whole bunch of others, but there's a specific short set that is not quick, that I'm not remembering. Let's do the 20-part body recharging, because I know that's one of it. Okay, this is another one that just is about bringing energy to the whole body. This is a little tricky, and this is when we begin to discover, as Yogananda put it, that we're not even omnipresent in our own bodies. Because we're trying to find 20 different body parts. And tense, okay, here's the principle that we use. The principle that we use is tension. Okay, just hold your right forearm out for a minute. And concentrate on bringing energy to it, and as you bring energy to it, just create tension in that forearm. As tense it as hard as you can. And then relax it, and then let the tension out of it. And as we tense it this time, feel it coming on gradually. Low tension, medium tension, high tension, vibrates with tension, then down to medium tension, then down to low tension, and down to no tension. Now, see how your one arm that you've done this to and the other arm, see how different your two arms feel, right, even at the moment, isn't that so? Can you feel the energy through here and the lack of it here? Well, just imagine, most of the time we're just walking around in our bodies and we're not consciously bringing energy to our bodies, and so they feel comparatively asleep compared to awake. So this principle of energization is that the universe is an unlimited supply of energy. Yogananda used to say, there's enough power in a little pinch of your flesh to electrify the whole city of Chicago for a week, he said. But we get so tired when we just have to fly to New York, right? Because we're not used to being a conscious magnet for that energy. And so it's learning to be a constant magnet for that energy is something that a person can acquire, and that's what the energization exercises are about. So using the principle of low, medium, and high tension, then high, medium, and low tension, the way we practice energization is by systematically doing that with conscious awareness throughout the whole body. I was very close in when I first met the came onto the path of self-realization. A man was a world-class athlete. He never followed through on all of this, but he was Olympic class and he was a pole vaulter. And the man who won the gold medal in the Olympics that year was someone that he would alternate winning and losing to. So he was really that good. But he got interested in the spiritual path and lost interest in all of that. But when he learned the energization exercises, he just sort of lamented. He said because his entire athletic career he was looking for this. He was looking for a way to consciously energize his physical body because at the level he was competing, you know, it was just tiny little fractions. And if he'd known how to really draw that energy through, he would have been, you know, superior to everyone. But by the time he learned it, he wasn't interested. So it was over. Okay. Now, what we do with this one is we tense and relax. First, we tense and relax the whole body in a wave. So what we're doing is starting with your feet. You're just gradually tensing everything all the way up to your neck. Okay. Okay, actually, you don't have to spread your arms out. I'm wrong about that. And then all the way from your neck down, you just gradually let the energy go back down again. And as we tense, we inhale. So let's try it again. Double breath, pulling the energy up and away, tensing all the way up to the neck, the forehead, the face, everything. Then exhale and let the tension go down and away. Okay, let's just try it one more time. Exhale, inhale and tense up and away. And then exhale and tense down and away. And we discover we don't know where our body is. Okay, now we're going to do this part by part. And the parts are first, left foot, just tense the left foot. And I know you're going to be tensing your right elbow at the same time, but you just try to find your left foot, tense it, and then relax. And you tense your right foot, and then you relax. Then your left calf, just the same way we did our forearm, try to just tense the left calf. Okay, then we'll tense the right calf. Just the right calf.
Okay, now do the left thigh. Just you can put your hand under if it helps you to find it. And then relax it. Then the right thigh. And then relax it. I'm going to pause now and add one more thought to this. The energy actually flows into our body through the medulla. This is where the ego is centered. So insofar as you are visualizing it, feel like you're floating in a sea of energy and that the energy is flowing in through the medulla and flowing down to the body part. And if that doesn't help, then forget it. Now do the left hip and buttock. And then relax it. Then the right hip and buttock. And then relax it. Then the stomach below the navel. And then relax it. Then the stomach above the navel. And relax it. Now left forearm again. And relax it. Right forearm. And relax it. Left upper arm, bicep. And relax it, right bicep. And relax it, left chest. Relax, right. Relax, left side of neck. Right side of neck. Front. Back of neck. And that's it. Okay, now we do the same thing. Yeah, let's do the same thing going down. Back of neck, relax, left side of neck, relax, right side of neck, relax, front of neck, relax, left chest, relax, right chest, relax, left upper arm, relax, right upper arm, relax, left forearm, relax, right forearm, relax, stomach above the navel, relax, stomach below the navel, relax, left hip and buttock, relax, right hip and buttock, relax, left thigh, relax, right thigh, relax, left calf, relax, right calf, relax, left foot, relax, and drop. Now, we're going to do it one more time, and this way we're going to do it. We'll do it sort of fast, but each time as you go up, instead of tensing and relaxing, you hold the tension so that you build up tension to the whole body, to the neck. You increase everything till you're vibrating with energy. Then you relax the whole neck first, trying to hold the tension in the rest of the body, and then we go down, relax.
So as you go up, you're holding the tension,
holding,
not releasing it.
Not releasing until it goes to the top. So we do it a little faster. And you just breathe as you need to. Okay. Left foot tense, right. Left calf, right. Left thigh, right. Left hip and buttock, right. Below the navel, above. Left forearm, right. Left upper arm, right. Left chest, right. Left neck, right, front, back. Now inhale, increase the tension everywhere and hold it, feel yourself just vibrating with energy. Now exhale, relax the whole neck, drop the head and rest it. Then right chest, left, right arm, left, right forearm, left, above the navel, below, right hip, left, right thigh, left, right calf, left, right foot, left. Fun? Okay, now that, just for now, let's just sit down. That's, both of those are extremely good exercises to do before you meditate, because they both energize, they wake you up, they help relax, you know, a double breath, double breathing like that, and then the 20 part recharging up and down.
That's great. I have to do something physical before I meditate,
yeah.
Because I notice the quality. I journal after my meditations,
uh-huh.
And if I go over the journals, you know,
uh-huh.
if I don't do some kind of yoga, or that would be good too, because that's fast.
The energization,
I like that.
The energization, are, if you can get, if you learn them and then get in the habit of just getting up and energizing, you know, even if you're sleepy when you come out of bed,
by the time you're finished energizing, you are wide awake. And you're not only wide awake, you're wide awake in a centered way. Because so, a lot of things that you do to get yourself going actually start distracting your mind.
Mm.
Whereas the energization exercises, gradually you tend to do them with your eyes closed because you can feel the energy better. And so you'll have spent, you know, 10 to 15 minutes just getting your body all tuned up and interiorized also. And then you find that the meditation goes better. See, what happens with meditation is you have to be very creative in order to be able to really sustain it for a long time. And people are creative in lots of different ways. Some people are very creative in learning lots of different inward techniques that they really like. Some people are creative in their love relationship with God. And so they take up chanting and they get pictures of the masters, and their whole sense of meditation is this relationship that you're having with this inward reality, and often personified in the form of whatever form of the spirit you really love. Some people are very impersonal, and the light is really what attracts them. But every person has to sort of find their own way, and there are an endless number of techniques just within Yogananda's path. And one of the reasons he offers so many things is because everybody has to find a different reality. We call our major training course the Art and Science of Raja Yoga, and Raja Yoga means all the paths of yoga together. The royal highway is what it means. And the art and science, because there's a scientific aspect to it, you know, this is how the breath works, this is how the mantra works, this is where you concentrate. But the art of it is figuring out, given who I am, what the constraints on my life are, what the kind of body I have, the temperament I've been given, how do I apply all these things? Like, you know, everybody has the same paint pot, but not everybody paints the same pictures. How do I take all of these different possibilities and work them through my particular nature? You know, I've always been a feeling-oriented person, and I can teach the techniques, I do the techniques, but I've never understood spiritual life in terms of the techniques. And I have other friends who are so just conscious of every nuance of how the breath and how you do this, and I can't imagine. It's just like, it just doesn't interest me. Yes, I use the techniques and I understand them, but I always understand them from how they feel.
What do you mean, the techniques, like the mechanical and technique?
Yeah, well, like, you know, the Hong Sa breath, and then when you get more into Kriya, when you start learning many different aspects of Kriya, there's many different nuances of it. And the masters know what they're doing, so you have to follow their guidance. I don't think that we have free license to reinvent, because you reinvent to your peril, because you don't know what's around the next bend. You decide you don't need this and you don't need that and you don't need this, and then you turn the next corner and you realize you need it at all and you have to run back and find it. But within that, just the way people think is what I was really saying, you know.
Sure.
Think about their meditation practice. I always approach it first as a relationship. That's just the way I am. It's always been to me a relationship.
And in terms of the like body and energy, I find myself in this a lot, and sometimes I see you do this too. It's an odd fill of energy, but it's not focused. It's not
right. It's out of control.
Yes, it is. I mean, I'll be noticing. I'm talking, and hey, I may be tired, but this is like, you know, on and on and on. It's like, wow, this isn't.
No, this isn't good for you.
It's not a good use of energy. I'm not putting it to any purpose.
It's exactly right. It's because it's out of your control. And when you begin, because you're not, I mean, even just this action right here, you see it's happening at the periphery of your body.
Mm.
Your energy is focused at the periphery of your body, and it's running you.
Right, yes.
Right. And so as a side effect of centering your energy more here and gradually learning, I mean, I think your own example of being in the airport, you were in the airport, your energy was going where it had always gone, and you had decided by a conscious decision of my own willpower, I could redirect my energy. Now, it's sort of hard to just stop your knee, but just as I was saying about going with the strengths, if you start working consciously to solve everything that's happening by concentrating on the breath, or like Eric was saying,
mm-hmm.
by just doing Hong Sa more deeply. When we're sitting here doing Hong Sa deeply, the body becomes less inclined to move, doesn't it?
Right.
So the more you do it, the more your energy will begin, you'll begin to build an internal magnetism that will drain that restlessness out of the other parts of you. And energization exercises are superb for that. Yeah, I mean, we all do this. I find sometimes when I'm giving a class, I've noticed lately I started moving my thumbs. It's just the oddest things. And I'll find myself standing in front of a group of people and I realize while I'm talking, I'm moving my thumbs. Where is that coming from? You know, just a little bit of restless energy, you know, escaping from my concentration. Mm. So you watch Swami Kriyananda speak sometimes. You watch Swami Kriyananda sing. He just opens his mouth. I mean, nothing shifts. He's so well trained. And often when he speaks the same thing, nothing shifts. It's like there's no physical energy involved. He just allows the spirit to come through him and nothing else has to move. I'm always going like this. It's my nature to be like that, but I've been thinking a lot about whether or not that's such a good idea. Mm. You know? It's an expression of who I am naturally, but maybe it's not such a good idea. You know, maybe we should sort of think about this.
It's less energy focused in the area where you're intending, right? Your intentions are on speaking and then you're moving, so.
Yeah. For me, I have the samskaras of a dancer, even though I'm not a dancer. I have the past life memory of it, so I like to illustrate.
Yeah.
I tend to illustrate with my body. But there is a degree of lack of conscious awareness in it that isn't quite as bad as that. But this is.
What's nice, though, is you can think that all the energy, though, is just there waiting.
Yes,
waiting to,
exactly.
Waiting to
why
make
you
smile.
Squandering it this way.
But see, the principle there of squandering it, you don't flip on the light. The principle of squandering it is the principle that you're wanting to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we don't have any lights. Okay. Yeah. No, yeah. Does that make sense?
Say that again, sorry.
I said the principle of squandering your energy is the principle you're trying to think of. Why am I using
yes.
my... And then you start asking yourself that question everywhere. It becomes a global question. Why am I squandering my energy on these thoughts? Why am I squandering it on these feelings? Why am I squandering it on these fears? You know, on this sense of loneliness, on this lack of faith in God. Why am I... And you begin to realize how much of our energy is going nowhere, and we wonder why we're both tired and we can't accomplish. And then again, I'll use Swami Kriyananda as an example. I mean, the man's, it's all right, we only have about 10 more minutes and we all know what each other looks like. Because everything is disconnected. Swami Kriyananda is the most prodigiously creative, productive person. I mean, he's just unbelievable. He's written 140 books. He's 86, he's still moving around three continents, and it's really hard to imagine how much he's accomplished in his life. And part of it is, he says himself, it's because he can concentrate. When he's doing one thing, nothing else in the world exists for him. When he's writing music, he can hardly use words. When he's writing books, he can't imagine ever writing music. It's just when he's in it, he's completely in it. More than that, though, I realized recently, I don't think how to say it. Thoughts are universal, and we are instruments for a higher reality. And we are no more responsible for what comes through us than a radio is for the music it plays. And a radio is not tired by simply tuning itself in and projecting. And you can project, a powerful radio can project everything that's out there. And I really, just the other day, was fully appreciating that Swami Kriyananda, as he explains himself, he describes his creativity by saying, I don't do anything. And he's not being fatuous in saying that or like trying to put on a false humility. It's his actual experience that he simply tunes into a reality that's there and then expresses it, both with writing and with music especially. It's already there and he just expresses it. He literally just tunes in, and therefore there's no strain to doing that. Whereas most of us have all this self-preoccupation, this sense of doubt, this identification with what we're doing, this completely scattered point of focus, And as a result, you know, our capacity to express limps out of us rather than just flowing out of it like it does through him. Mm-hmm. And all of us have had moments when suddenly it is effortless and we know it, and it's happening and we know we're not responsible, and that gives us a clue to what we're really looking for. But these are lifelong practices, and the energization exercises and the Hong Sao technique and others that you can learn if you want are the way in which we reverse that misdirected energy and bring it under our control. I may have said at the beginning that we live our lives like it's, our lives are like the water coming out of a fire hose, and we try to direct it by batting at it with our hands. You know, it's just not a very good way to direct the energy force. You want to at least get your hand on the nozzle, and preferably you want to get your hand on the spigot, and even better, you want to go back, you know, to where the water's coming from. Mm-hmm. Because if you can be standing there, then you can send it any way you want. I mean, you meet people, that's what they're like. They're just batting the water, just, you know, hoping that it'll come out somewhere. And it all can be done. It's really, it's not even hard. It's not even complicated. It's just a question of consistently applying yourself with methods that work. Mm-hmm. Not every method that people offer you works that well, because they're, people are standing here and they're only able to tell you what's below them. But if you start with a master who's standing here, then he knows everything. So some things will work from here down, but they won't work beyond that. And that's why you have to be both creative and respectful when we get engaged in these things. Does that make sense? Okay, questions or thoughts, comments? Do you have anything, Eric, to add to anything? Oh, I was starting to say about meditation itself. There's a few things that you can do that also help your meditation practice. There's subtle energies that flow on this planet, and enlightenment always comes from the east. And that's not just a geographic statement about where countries are located. If you have a choice when you meditate, it's beneficial to face east. If you have no choice, don't worry about it. But if you have a choice, it's helpful to face east. This is, you're cooperating then with the flow of energy. There's also downward pulling energies from the physical earth itself, and you can insulate yourself against those energies by sitting on silk or wool. If you sit on a chair, this is not either, this is only rayon, but if you have a silk or a wool blanket, you can insulate yourself in this way, like that. Or I have a sheepskin. I sit on a sheepskin when I meditate, or you can lay a wool blanket out or something like that, or silk. Silk or wool both work. All of these things are ways of, there are two benefits of this. Facing east, sitting on something like this, literally it has a physical beneficial effect. But the other side is that if you can establish in your meditation practice a degree of ritualistic regularity to it, these things assume vibrations. Like, I have a meditation blanket that I have had forever. Since, you know, I've had it since the mid-70s. And it's just, I only use it for meditation or for special reasons. And every time I'm anywhere near that blanket, it has meditation vibrations in it. And if you're going to start meditating regularly, it's very helpful that you establish in your house somewhere, some place where you meditate. If you have the luxury of a whole room, then set aside a whole room. If you can dedicate a closet, barring that, at least define a square on the floor that is not the same place where you sit to watch television or to eat your dinner or to go to sleep. You know, it sometimes you have to do certain things because your life doesn't allow it to be otherwise. But if possible, when I lived in a little studio apartment and I started meditating, I took my bed and I pulled it about 2 feet. It was just a mattress on the floor. We were hippies at that time, and it was stuck in the corner like that. I pulled it about 2 feet out from the wall, and then I got out of bed on one side and I meditated on the other side. And so there was just this spot that was not part of the room. And now in the room that I have, I just have my sheepskin and it faces in a little corner. And it's very nice to put God reminding, divine reminding things in front of you. It's not really such a good idea to put your wife and your children there. If you want to bless them, I used to I used to open up the back of my altar pictures, and I would put the people that I loved behind the master's pictures, so that they were there, but they weren't distracting me. And so I always knew that they were there, and if I wanted to bless them, I could, you know, sort of send an extra prayer, but I wasn't looking at them. Because they pull you back to the world that you're trying to center yourself above, not out of, but above. It's very helpful if you have individuals, images that are meaningful to you spiritually, whether it's a cross or a Jewish star or a statue or a face. Ideally, if you, I mean, these are photographs. Of course, Jesus isn't a photograph, but these are Yogananda's actual eyes. And the eyes of a holy person are extremely powerful. And if you can have the eyes of a holy person in front of you when you meditate and look into those eyes, it helps put you where you want to be. And you can, you know, when your mind gets restless, you can look into their eyes and find their consciousness and then close your eyes again, and it'll help you. And all of that helps create a commitment in you to meditate and helps define it as an activity that's out of the ordinary. Instead of, oh, I'm just sitting on the couch and then I flip off the TV and now I'll do a Hong Sao. No, I stand up, I lay out the blanket, I face the masters. One of my friends, there's no way in the context of her family life that she can have an altar set up all the time. But she has a box. And whenever she's going to meditate, she opens the box, and there's even pictures, you know, as part of the box, and then she has certain things she just pulls out. So it's not always fixed, but she gets the box. So that so we're saying to our conscious and subconscious minds, I'm doing something different. And even the act of building an altar, defining a meditation space, going out and buying 2.5 yards of wool or silk, you're putting your energy behind this as a practice. And I say to people, it's not even that you meditate every single day, but you have now made a commitment to meditate. You've become a person who meditates. And we just work our way gradually into that reality. And by the same token, the more regular you can be in your practice, the better. Just like everything, you know, it's 9 o'clock, you're ready for breakfast. It's 3 o'clock, you're expecting your cup of coffee. 7 o'clock, you have to get your kids out of bed. It's 6 o'clock, I sit down to meditate. And then the mind and the body and the spirit just become used to it. Now, the best time to meditate, as I said last week, is when you will meditate. But it's also important, and I found this very, very helpful, don't set yourself such a high standard that when you don't have time to meditate for your full half hour, you don't meditate at all. I often encourage people, set yourself a minimum standard. I will meditate 3 minutes in the morning and 3 minutes at night, and everything else is extra. Because then at least you have put a rock in the river at a certain point. And just before your day starts, you stop, you tune in, you try to get still. Before your day is over, you stop, you tune in, you try to get still. People who have families often find, I know friends of mine, they'll leave work, sometimes they'll just park their car somewhere and often just meditate right in the car before they go into their house. Or if they can go someplace, a church or a quiet zone. I used to meditate. I worked I worked downtown in San Francisco I don't even remember which building it was, but it was one of those huge sky rises. Nobody ever used the staircase in those buildings. They were absolutely abandoned, empty places. And I used to go in at lunch, and I would meditate during lunch in the stairwell. Total silence and complete solitude. You know, I was on the 28th floor or something, and I could just, the stairwells were unlocked. I didn't get locked in. It seems like in another place I would go on the roof. You know, just find a spot where people aren't. And balance all those factors. This is where the art comes in. You have to just figure it out. How important is this to me? What am I willing to do to make it work? So, those are all just fundamental, basic ideas.
So, make sure for the Hong Sao technique, you'll talk maybe next week about the energy going up and down the spine, because I don't think we've...
No, I don't think we've talked about that much at all. You're right, so remind us. And maybe next week you can also talk about what you can add to this from your experience. I would really like you to do that. I think we have enough background now that we could really do that. Okay.
Can you tell me what's the significance of the silk or wool?
This is just how the master tells us. It insulates you against certain downward pulling energies from the earth itself.
I remember reading that, but I never read any more than that. It was just that's what it was.
That's about as far as I can tell you, too. Yeah, that's the whole explanation. Both silk and wool have that effect.
Of course, they're both made by,
animals.
Yeah.
They are made by animals. You know, they suggest that yogis meditate on deer skin.
Right.
On a deer skin, preferably one that died of natural causes. And very powerful yogis are meditate on tiger skin. But they say that unless you have a lot of strength in your meditation practice, you shouldn't meditate on a tiger skin.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Dead animals. Who knows why? Swamiji bought for me and several others years ago a sheepskin, and that's what I use. But it has the, you know, part of the sheep is on there. I mean, it's leather back. It wasn't just, it's off a dead sheep. So part of you thinks that
this
that
isn't very yoga-like.
Yeah, you would think so, but nonetheless, there it is.
So maybe more ritualistic Native American kind of, like, I think of like a Native kind
but these
connection
are,
with the animal thing.
Yeah, know? These are Vedic traditions.
Right.
There could be some energy with that specific type of
animal.
Just to say, wool and silk. Yeah, it's true. They're all animal related. They're all living. They're all from living creatures.
Yeah.
Not like just cotton balls. Interesting. Well, that's more than I ever thought about. My mother grew up in Key West, Florida. This is totally unrelated. She grew up in Key West, Florida, lived her whole life there.
Interesting place to grow up.
Yeah, many years ago, of course. It's what it is now is not what it was then. She moved with my father to Texas. He was in the Army, and he was transferred in. Across the street from where they lived, there was a cotton field, and then the bowls of cotton burst, and she thought it had snowed. She was so excited, she thought she was seeing snow for the first time, and cotton burst like that.
And they just completely take over a whole patch of land, right? It's all white.
It turns white.
Yeah.
That was the only explanation she could think of.
I would love to see a cut, though.
She can see it in Route 5, and there are lots of cotton fields. Yeah. All the way to LA.
Well, if there's, we have filled our time. If there's nothing else, quite productively.
How many do we have left?
This is number 4, I think. Isn't it right, Jen?
Two
more
classes.
We'll
go until after school finishes.
Till school finishes on Friday, and we finish the following Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just good.
Probably
Monday.
I'd like to get more into the education for life and the qualities that the kids are receiving, a little bit of what's happening right now in the school. That'd be cool to touch on some of that, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, we've been running parallel tracks here.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have solidly meditated. Eric's going to teach us one more technique related to meditating next week, and then we can step back into education for life for a while if you'd like.
Great.
This has just been a pretty free-form story, and we can just continue with the art and science in the way we want. Okay? All right.
Thank you.
That's it then.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, it's a joy.